Support comes from Gemma, architects, planners, and designers seeking to bring joy to their clients and communities. Details at gemastl.com.
From the St. Louis Public Radio Newsroom, this is The Gateway. It's Thursday, January 2nd, 2025. I'm Abby Larico. Advocates for abortion rights cheered when voters approved Amendment 3, which put the right to an abortion in the Missouri Constitution. But nearly 2 months after the ballot initiative passed, the procedure still isn't available in the state.
When voters passed that in November, I think a lot of people thought the next day you could probably walk into a clinic and get an abortion, but as we've seen, that's not the case.
St. Louis Public Radio's health reporter Sarah Fentem speaks with editor Brian Moline about what comes next for Amendment 3. Plus, St. Louis Boosters have worked in recent years to elevate its reputation as a foodie destination. That's despite the region being ignored by the world's preeminent culinary institution, the Michelin Guide. Some local restaurateurs, though, think that could be a good thing.
I don't know that we can ever be competitive with New York or LA or cities like that, but I don't know that we want to be.
I explore how St. Louis chefs are setting up their own table. Those stories coming up after this news on The Gateway. St. Louis officials are hoping to find a developer for the Railway Exchange Building in the next few months. St. Louis Public Radio's Jason Rosenbaum has more on the next steps for the historic downtown St. Louis structure.
The Railway Exchange Building has been vacant for years and deteriorated to a point where city officials embarked on eminent domain proceedings. St. Louis Development Corporation President and CEO Neil Richardson says the plan is to knock down a decaying parking garage and eventually find a private developer by the summer.
So with inflation and rising costs and construction, I mean, you're looking at it maybe a $400 million proposed project that can come to downtown St. Louis.
Richardson says he's hoping that federal and state tax credits can defray the total cost of the Railway Exchange Building overhaul. I'm Jason Rosenbaum, St. Louis Public Radio.
Missouri Republicans are set to push for further expansion of charter schools when the General Assembly reconvenes this month. The Missouri Independent reports, at the same time, Democrats are pushing for more local control in counties where charters already operate. They also want to roll back an expansion into Boone County that passed in 2024. Identical bills filed by two Republican lawmakers, Senator Ben Brown of Washington and Representative Michael O'Donnell of St. Louis, seek to authorize charter schools in five counties, including Jefferson, St. Louis, and Jackson, and in municipalities with at least 30,000 residents. With some exceptions, charter schools are currently only allowed to operate in Kansas City, the city of St. Louis, and Boone County. The vice president of the St. Louis Public Schools Board is not seeking re-election. Matt Davis announced on social media Tuesday that he is not filing paperwork to run for a second term on the board. The deadline was Tuesday at 5 p.m. Davis's decision comes as the board grapples with the fallout from former Superintendent Keisha Scarlett's one-year tenure. The board fired Scarlett in September for misuse of public funds and violating district hiring policies. St. Louis Public Radio reported in December that Scarlett and her office charged more than $200,000 to district credit cards. A St. Charles bookstore has launched a literacy foundation. As St. Louis Public Radio's Marissa Ann Lewis-Thompson reports, Main Street Books wants to improve literacy for elementary school students one book at a time.
The Main Street Books Literacy Foundation buys books from authors and donates them to students at partnered elementary schools in St. Charles. The foundation so far has donated more than 300 books to students at two St. Charles schools. Ellen Hall is a co-owner of the bookstore and president of the foundation. Hall says it's already a hit with the kids.
Oh, they loved it. They were so excited. They just were thrilled to have the book. They wrote us these handmade cards and said thank you. And they were so good. They were just so attentive and wanted to ask questions about the book.
The foundation plans to donate 800 more books by May to both schools and expand their reach. In St. Charles, I'm Marissa Ann Lewis-Thompson, St. Louis Public Radio.
Voters in November passed Amendment 3, which placed the right to an abortion in the Missouri Constitution. But the ballot initiative's approval at the polls marked the beginning of another legal dispute over abortion access. St. Louis Public Radio editor Brian Moline speaks with health reporter Sarah Fentum about why patients still can't get an abortion in Missouri, even after the passage of Amendment 3.
Missouri voted to approve the right to an abortion in the state, but it's still not available. So what's the holdup?
So first, some background. Amendment 3 gave Missourians the constitutional right to an abortion. And when voters passed that in November, I think a lot of people thought the next day you could probably walk into a clinic and get an abortion. But as we've seen, that's not the case. The law put the right to the abortion in the Constitution, but a judge still needed to overturn the ban. So two Planned Parenthood affiliates in the eastern and western parts of Missouri sued to overturn the ban, and then a Kansas City judge halted the ban shortly before Christmas. But the judge, her name's Jerry Zhang, left some other requirements that apply to abortion clinics in place, and Planned Parenthood says with those requirements on the books, they still can't offer abortions yet.
What kind of regulations?
In order to provide abortions, Missouri clinics need to adhere to certain rules to maintain a special provider's license. Some of those license requirements are rules for the design of the facilities. The clinics need to have doorways that are like X width, etc. And then there are clinical requirements. For example, a clinic needs to confirm pregnancy with a lab test, and probably most controversially, providers need to give pelvic exams to patients who are seeking abortions. And Planned Parenthood says it still can't provide abortions while those restrictions are on the books. They say the pelvic exam in particular isn't ethical or medically necessary, and so access right now is in a holding pattern.
So what happens next, Sarah? Will Planned Parenthood challenge these bans?
Planned Parenthood this week asked Judge Zhang to reconsider her December order, and it's officially called a motion to reconsider. They argue that these licensing requirements violate a part of Amendment 3 that prohibits discrimination against abortion providers and patients. The motion argues because other medical facilities in the state that offer similar procedures don't have those specific licensing requirements, the existing laws are unfairly singling out abortion providers and patients. If the judge agrees with them and says, okay, you're right, I agree with you, then clinics could begin providing abortions right away. But if she doesn't agree, it's less clear what Planned Parenthood's next step would be.
And I keep hearing that the judge's order is temporary. What does that mean exactly?
Mm-hmm. That's right. Planned Parenthood has asked for a preliminary injunction. And that's when a judge keeps certain rights in place while other legal methods play out on a parallel track. And Zhang's order is a sort of placeholder until a larger trial takes place that would overturn the state's abortion ban so that Amendment 3 could go into effect. And that could be later this year, but as we've seen previously with Amendment 3 litigation, it could be a rocky road.
Sarah Fentum, St. Louis Public Radio health reporter, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And Sarah was speaking there with editor Brian Moline. The prestigious Michelin Guide recently released a new list of star-earning restaurants in the U.S., so I explored why there aren't any in St. Louis, and why some local foodies say that's a good thing.
While eating fulfills a pretty basic human need, going out to eat has become an activity, an experience, a pursuit all its own. And for about a century, one name has claimed authority in evaluating culinary greatness: Michelin.
People travel specifically to go to a Michelin-starred restaurant.
That's Kat Neville, who hosts the PBS food show Tastemakers.
If you're truly a foodie, it's like a pilgrimage in a way.
The French tire company launched its guide in 1889 as a way to promote driving for leisure, including to restaurants. In the 1920s, the guide system of awarding stars was born, and today achieving 1, 2, or 3 stars is considered a top culinary honor.
It's something that says this is world-class cuisine.
Michelin says its inspectors are anonymous, but Tara Galina, who owns celebrated St. Louis spots including Vicia and Bistro La Floraison, knows none have entered her restaurants, at least not on official Michelin business.
People will be like, remind me, how many stars do you have again? And I was like, oh my God, 0, but thank you.
She and her husband, Chef Michael, are among the region's most decorated restaurateurs, with multiple James Beard nods and consistent national and local acclaim. but they're local to St. Louis, a city Michelin doesn't scout.
No, that's not even a thing here. You know, it's just an assumption that they can decide to go where they want to go, but they don't, and it's all driven by money.
Even those who know enough about the lore of the star often don't realize that Michelin only looks at a relatively small selection of restaurants in the U.S., and cities where the guide has most recently expanded made the map because their local tourism boards have paid for it. The famously elusive Michelin did not respond to our request for comment on this story, but in the past 2 years, Colorado groups reportedly spent a collective $600,000 to entice scouts to consider awarding stars in a few cities there, and Texas tourism associations spent a total of nearly $3 million for 3 years of star chasing. St. Louis native Logan Ely cooked in a few Michelin-starred kitchens before opening his restaurants, which include Fox Park's The Lucky Accomplice. While he shares plenty of respect for the distinction, he questions if that kind of money really makes sense here.
In a city like St. Louis, you could drive around for 10 minutes and find 10 really good things to spend money on from the city's perspective. There would be a handful of places that get a star for sure. Does that bring in more money? I don't know.
Kat Neville, that international gastronaut, is also the founder of local food publication Sauce Magazine and now works as a director at Explore St. Louis. Her job is to figure out how to instead spend the money to spread the good word about the St. Louis region.
We do traditional paid advertising, television, Meta, Google, all of that kind of jazz. We absolutely position St. Louis as a food city because it is, and I think that all you have to do is just step into one of our great restaurants and it's apparent.
What if that reputation made its way to Michelin and it decided to scrap the business model and begin awarding stars in St. Louis without any financial incentive? Galena says she'd play along.
Reluctantly.
But she says adding stars would risk devaluing what makes going out to eat here so worth it.
The fact that we are a little scrappy, I think, is what makes most of the restaurants really good. And you can take chances here, and you can take risks here that are much harder to take in larger markets.
Ely agrees. He closed Lucky Accomplice after New Year's Eve service to redo the space and concept. It's his latest creative reinvention made possible, he says, by St. Louis's more collaborative, less competitive dining landscape.
I'm constantly trying to think of, like, why did I even start cooking? I like feeding people.
Going back to the table with the basics that could be what really make this food scene shine. Thank you to my editor for that piece, Jonathan All. The Gateway is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, a listener-supported service of the University of Missouri St. Louis. Theme music by Ryan McNeely of Adult Fur. Thanks so much for listening to The Gateway as one of your early 2025 accomplishments. I hope that we can make listening every day an easy goal to accomplish for you this year. I'm Abby Larico, and from the St. Louis Public Radio Newsroom, this has been The Gateway.